CNN Radio, I'm Matt Cherry. President Obama is set to give a much-anticipated speech this morning before a key American-Israeli lobbying group. CNN's Elise Labbitt reports the president's remarks to the American-Israeli Public Affairs Committee come at a critical time.
They're really going to be looking for President Obama to kind of clarify what he said the other day about those returning, that a Palestinian state should return to those 67 borders, which Prime Minister Netanyahu in the meeting the next day called indefensible.
Several Republican presidential hopefuls, including House Speaker Newt Gingrich and Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann, will also be attending. Some in the GOP have criticized the president for not being supportive enough of Israel. Indiana Governor Mitch Daniels will not run for president. An email sent early Sunday morning ended the speculation. Republican strategist Matt Mikowiak says now would have been a perfect time for Governor Daniels to run.
The stars had aligned for him politically. I think that the primary electorate was lining up pretty well for him, and the issues, both the political and policy issues, were lining up well for him as well, both in terms of the primary and the general election.
Daniels stressed family interests and wishes in making his decision. Yemeni President Ali Abdullah Saleh has put off a deal to step down. He's rejecting the opposition's signature on a plan paving the way for his removal from power and to the end to months of anti-government protests. Storms in northeast Kansas, including a reported tornado, ravaged the small town of Redding, destroying at least 20 homes. Stacy Horner works at a convenience store nearby.
I mean, it wasn't that big to begin with, and maybe about 30 people are injured that we know of so far.
One person in Redding was killed. The airspace has been closed around Iceland's main airport, this after the eruption of the Grímsvötn volcano. However, it's not impacting any European or transatlantic flights. For news anytime, go to CNN.com. This is CNN Radio.
Right now at the Home Depot, get $5 off 1 gallon cans of select Behr, Glidden, and Martha Stewart Living paints and stains. So this weekend can be the weekend your dining room goes dramatic, your deck looks years younger, or your living room just looks a lot better. We're lowering the cost of a new favorite color with $5 off our best brands of paints and stains. More saving, more doing. That's the power of the Home Depot. Mail-in rebate through May 30th, U.S. only, void where prohibited.
I had no idea tire pressure could affect my car's fuel efficiency. Thankfully, the Sears Blue Automotive crew was there to help. They checked my tire pressure for free and even filled me in on what types of new tires could help me save on gas.
Through May 31st, save on all tires. Plus, save an additional $80 after mail-in rebate with a purchase of 4 Goodyear tires. Special financing available. And go to SearsAuto.com to get other great offers, including a coupon for a conventional Valvoline oil change for only $21.99 with no shop fees. Sears Auto Center. Exclusions apply. See store for details.
This is Dan Tullis, and I just called
Joel Clark,
one of Select Quote Insurance Services Term Life agents.
Hi, Mr. Tullis.
Joel, how does Select Quote save you money on term life insurance?
Well, buying term life insurance is all about choosing the right company. Let's say you take antidepressants or you smoke. All insurance companies are going to price that differently. We'll impartially shop all the companies we represent to find you the best price.
Can you give me an example?
Sure. I just got a man, 40 years old, who takes blood pressure medication, a $500,000 policy with a highly rated insurance company. His price, $21 a month.
Call 1-800-500-0351 and see how affordable term life insurance can be. That's 1-800-500-0351. 1-800-500-0351. Or go to selectquote.com. We shop, you save. Get full details on the example policy at selectquote.com/commercials. Your price could vary depending on your health, issuing company, and other factors. Not available in all states.
Why should you take krill oil and omega-3 fish oil? Well, if you are concerned about any of the following, you should absolutely be taking both. And if you qualify, we'll even give you a risk-free trial of a pharmaceutical-grade fish oil combined with the super antioxidant power of krill. But first, you have to answer yes to one of the following. Are you concerned about your joint health? What about your memory and focus? Are you concerned about your heart health? Well, if you want to increase your joint comfort by 28% in just 7 days and promote memory, focus, and heart health, we're going to give you a free bottle of Krill Omega-3 Fish Oil. Just call this toll-free number and claim yours. 1-800-900-6118. We guarantee once you try Krill Omega-3, you won't believe the difference. That's why we're going to send you a free bottle just for calling. Call now for your free bottle and start easing sore joints today. Call 1-800-900-6118. 1-800-900-6118. 1-800-900-6118.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Executive Leaders Radio. In this hour, you'll hear directly from our region's finest business leaders. Through each of the interviews, these high-achieving leaders become relatable role models who share how they were able to build their enterprise, their personal secrets of success, about leadership styles, and opportunities that lie ahead. Prepare to be inspired, entertained, and to hear wisdom unheard elsewhere. Executive Leaders Radio.
You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. This is your host, Mike Mannion of Sirius Interim Executive Solutions, and I'm joined by my co-hosts, Phil Horegi of Sabre Systems and David Cooper of Bank of America. And we've got a great lineup of guests for you today, including Lloyd Mustin, founder and president of XL Incorporated, and Doug Dunkel, co-founder and COO, of Knightpoint Systems. Let's get started. I'd like to introduce to you our first guest, a gentleman by the name of Lloyd Mustin. Lloyd is the founder and president of XL Incorporated. Welcome, Lloyd. And what is XL Incorporated?
XL is a company I founded in 1989, and we do acquisition support, grants management, and specialized professional services and program management.
And what does all that mean?
And what that means to a layman is we help the government buy goods and services from the private sector. For example, we're involved with high-speed rail across America, broadband across America, humanitarian efforts in Libya and Japan, and we really try to stay in mission-critical areas for our federal customers and in some way making the world a better place.
And how big or small is XL Incorporated?
We are about 220 people.
And you've been around for how long?
I've been around since the beginning.
Okay. I see that you're the founder, so you didn't need to twist anybody's arm, except your own maybe, to start the company. Why did you found a company?
Well, I've always been entrepreneurial-spirited and had businesses growing up as a kid through high school and college. And so I knew ultimately I would start something on my own. I'm very independent-minded.
Now, what were you doing immediately prior to founding the company?
I was in the Navy. I was an officer in the Navy.
And tell us a little bit more.
My father, my grandfather were naval officers, and I knew that it would be a way to get some great responsibility and some good experience in leadership, and so I went in right after college.
To say your grandfather and father were naval officers is sort of the unembellished truth. It is truth.
Yes.
What did they do in the Navy?
They were both vice admirals, pretty senior naval officers,
yeah.
And just had a ship, the USS Mustin DDG-89, named for them. So we had a pretty strong military background.
So what was it like not only being the grandson and son of naval officers, but naval officers at that level with a ship named after them? What was that like?
It was probably better for my younger brother, because when I was coming along, they were working their way up. My grandfather had already retired, but my father was working his way up through the ranks. My younger brother is 8 years younger than I am, and so he was in the house when my father was a senior officer.
So does that mean it was a benefit to have him as a senior officer, or what was their pressure? Tell us a bit more about that.
No, there surprisingly wasn't pressure. That's a great question. I get asked that a lot, especially when I was on active duty. Were you pressured to go in? And I really was not. Not at all. In fact, I don't think my father and I spoke much about it. I just came up with the idea on my own to do it. But it was certainly influenced by the way I'd grown up.
Yeah. Now, Lloyd, you had mentioned that you founded XL immediately after coming out of active duty.
Yes.
That's a little bit of an unusual path. Most people who come out of active duty spend some time doing something else and then start a business. But, you know, you just kind of went like right from the frying pan into the fire.
Well, that's true. I knew when I went into active duty, went into the Navy, that I would probably not stay in. But I wanted the training, the experience, and I've stayed in the reserves all these years, and I'm a captain now in the Navy Reserve. But I always knew I wanted to be in business for myself, and I didn't know exactly what I would do or how I would do it at the time, but always knew since I was younger that I'd have my own company.
When you got out of the Navy and decided to found the company, did you make that decision because you were just supremely confident, or you're just
great with risk and you weren't sure what was going to happen or what was going on inside of you?
You know, it's funny. I've been asked that a lot. And at the time, I was supremely confident, but naively supremely confident. It never occurred to me that the business would not work. And so I set out to start it, and I got into acquisition support because across that acquisition life cycle, there was a need for expertise. And I thought if I could find some people that met the requirements and could contact the agencies and get them working and just build it like a small law firm, and here we are all these years later.
So tell us about the requirements you saw in the first employee, who I think at the time was your girlfriend.
Yes, she was my girlfriend at the time, and I joke that that was the deal sealer, if you will, for the lady who became my wife. She is beautiful, smart, tall, everything one wants in a spouse. But when I saw her fingers going across that keyboard, I knew I was in love. So she was there from the beginning and helped me type contracts, and I didn't even know how to type.
What was it like for her being a business founder and owner, and it was just the two of you?
Well, she was still working. She was in the Navy herself. She was still on active duty at the time, and she was just getting ready to get out and going to work for the federal government. Where she's now the Chief of Staff for National Nuclear Security Administration. So,
wow.
So it was an adventure. It was fun. I mean, you know, we didn't think we couldn't do it. If you ask me now, how risky is that? Knowing what I know, I probably would have been a lot more risk averse than I was then. So it was good. You know, sometimes you really can overanalyze things, I think.
Lloyd, when you mentioned you'd gone into the Navy to you had come out of college and you were looking to, I don't know, get sort of like a life experience and maybe, you know, see what you could learn, you know, from being in the Navy. Are you surprised? I mean, did you learn what you thought you were going to learn, or are there any surprise lessons that you learned coming out?
That's a good question too. I really appreciate my time in the Navy more and more the older I get. You know, you really learn just some basic values, you know, honor, courage, commitment, the way to conduct yourself. These same values are the cornerstone of why I named the company XL. It's a variation on the word excellence, and that's the way we conduct our business, and that's really helped us a long time. So there was a time when I got out immediately. I was ready to get out, but those lessons have been really great lessons.
Your dad gave you some very good advice during the last part of your college career before you went in the Navy.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about that.
He's told us that the gun for your life's race goes off when you get out of college, and you're going to find people that want to hang out and do a lot of different things, but the real stars who are your competitors in life are going to be running very hard from day one. So whatever you end up doing, you know, my advice to you is to do that.
Well, it sounds to me like you were running hard when you were 12 years old, because you already had a business at 12 years old, did you not?
I did. I had a few different ones. The first one was aggregating newspaper routes and hiring kids to deliver the papers and collecting the money, and I enjoyed that. And then on a larger scale, we started painting curbs, street addresses on curbs in neighborhoods where the addresses weren't visible. And that was pretty lucrative. I always joked I was making more money in the summer than my father was probably making on active duty.
Let's go back to the paper route for a moment. So this was not just you by yourself riding your bike and throwing the papers on the front porch.
No.
This was different.
This was different. I started doing that, but I got the idea that I could take on other routes and have other people deliver the papers. And so we just kept expanding that, and the curb painting business too. You know, the key ingredient in everything I've done is leveraging my own time. I think that's the way I think about it.
This experience kind of broadened when you were going to boarding schools in various countries around the world.
Well, when I was in a boarding school in England, what that taught me is I just learned to think on my feet and be self-reliant. You know, and that was the good lesson there. And then we moved to Greece, you know, with my father being in the military. And that was learning a new language and a completely different culture, which I really embraced and loved. And and just took on that challenge. So, you know, it's, you either like that or you don't, I think.
I understand you also saw some tanks running down the streets from time
to time. That was during the Cyprus crisis, yes. And my mother was very worried, but I spoke the language well enough and felt pretty comfortable. And again, maybe in retrospect, a little too comfortable. You know, you don't realize vulnerability at that age. But I was able to communicate, and everything turned out okay.
Lord, you mentioned your mother. Can you just tell a little bit about her? You know, the kind of occupation your father has. You know, he would be gone for, you know, pretty long stretches of time.
Very much so. He was gone for several months at a time, for many of the years. So my mother, I would characterize as being quietly confident and again very self-reliant, and you know, we knew it was time for us to straighten up when she would look at our report card and say, you have to do better than this. That's all she said.
Tell us about your mom's role in moving the family to London and sort of how your dad gave her the handoff.
I hope she listens to this, because I think it was a great, as an adult looking back, a great feat. We had three or four kids at the time in schools, and my father had to take a big job with Cincus Navior, and he said, you know, here's the keys, rent the house or sell it, move to London, find a place to live, get the kids in schools, and let me know how that's working out, pretty much. And so she did.
Did she mind doing that, or did she gladly accept the challenge?
She gladly accepted it. My parents were married very young, and so, you know, when you had asked me, was it tough growing up moving so much, and I would say it's all I knew. I loved it. But my wife grew up in a little town in North Carolina and stayed through kindergarten all the way through college with all the same people, very different. But you only know what you know, and I think that was the same with my mother. Right out of high school, she married my father and had kids pretty young, and so she knew with everything he'd done, you have to be self-reliant.
Your brother didn't appreciate the moving a lot as much as you did.
No, he did not.
Tell us about that.
Fortunately for me, I was gifted in not being such a great athlete, so I could be on the teams while he was the star of the teams. And being the star of the teams, he felt like his prime high school football playing years were being spent overseas versus back here in Virginia, where he was being looked at for colleges and the like.
Skipping forward a little bit, what do you see for Excel, you know, when you look ahead, maybe say 5 years mm-hmm. from now?
You know, I right now we're so much in execution mode. We're at about $33 million this year. We're projecting $42 million next year. Our compound annual growth rate has been over 70% since 2007. So, I like to say, and it's a little. You could call it a kind of a cop out, but I'm riding the tiger right now. It's the, you know, and he who rides the tiger cannot dismount. I don't have as much vision as I've got. Let's stay on the tiger. But I see the markets we're in. Not to get too much into the business, but there's a critical shortage of talent in the market areas that we support, and that's only going to become exacerbated over the next few years as the boomers all retire.
What did having a paper route, and not just a paper route, but you were the owner of a company, and you had a staff of other boys, and also the same situation with your company doing curbs. What did that have to do with the way you run the company now?
You know, I guess the right answer here is running a company successfully, whether it be painting a curb or a paper route, really comes down to the people, and good people in any walk of life have choices as to where they work. And somehow conveying a sense of optimism and possibilities and future to people to get them to do what you want them to do is really the key for all of it.
You're telling me that you were able to spot good people when you were 12 years old and when you were in college painting curbs.
And the yardstick for what a good person was painting a curb is obviously different than it is doing the things we're doing now. But in that regard, I had friends who I knew would do a decent job on the curbs. It was, could they paint the curb? And did they have a decent work ethic? You know, some of the basic things. And they were friends of our family. And, you know, by and large, they were the same types of people we were. And so we took it seriously. We went out in the neighborhoods and did it.
With such rapid growth, how have you found that you've had to change, you know, especially as, you know, your role probably has to change and you've had to adapt to sort of accommodate and even, grow in, you almost have to grow into your growth?
Yeah, that's a very timely question. It's, 2007, we were at 7 million. So
wow.
The year before that, we were at about 5. So we have just grown so fast and really about stretched our infrastructure to the limits. You know, everybody's working very efficiently. But again, the overriding part of all of this is an optimism. You know, everybody gives 100%. We care a lot about the people in the company, and it really shows, and that's really the basis of all of it. Now, me personally, you know, I'm still doing a lot of small business types of things. I'm migrating. This year we had a lot of awards, as I think you know. The latest one was the Association for Corporate Growth, Emerging Growth Company for under $50 million, and that was for sustained profitability, which means a lot to me. My background's finance, and you know, a lot of companies can grow, but we're not borrowing money. We're fueling our own growth intrinsically. We're just being smart about it. But I'm finding that I hardly have any more. I felt like we actually had two awards the same night, and I was kind of joking. It's like being at the Oscars. I'm going to have to do a video saying, I wish I could be out there with you, but I'm somewhere else.
What sort of feedback have you gotten from your father as your business career has taken off?
He's very, very proud, and that means a lot to me, and my mother too. You know, they don't really understand it all that much. I mean, I never had a mentor to do what I'm doing. But they know we're doing good work, and he gets a lot of good feedback from a lot of guys that were former naval officers who work for us now. And so,
yeah. Lloyd, give us the web address for XL Incorporated.
It's www.xla.com.
Okay, one more time. I want to make sure everybody gets it.
It's www.xla.com.
Thanks very much, Lloyd. We've been speaking with Lloyd Mustin, founder and president of XL Incorporated. I'd like to thank my co-hosts, Phil Horegi of Sabre Systems and David Cooper of Bank of America, for helping me structure the interview. Don't forget to check out our website, www.executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders, and we will be right back in a moment after this important business spotlight.
Hi, this is Paul Smith from the Potomac Companies with your business spotlight, and joining us today is...
Jessica Druckmann.
Jessica, and what company are you with?
I'm with Concero.
And Jessica, what is Concero?
Concero is a company that puts together events for senior-level executives. They're intimate, invitation-only, and take place over the course of 2.5 days.
So are these like CEO getaways to Las Vegas kind of things?
Not exactly. We actually say to leave your golf clubs at home. They are serious events. We bring executives together to network with each other, forge new relationships, benchmark, learn new ideas to bring back to their organizations.
Are there specific type of target companies you work with?
We aim for Fortune 1000 companies, the larger organizations for the most part. Most of our events are function-driven, so we put events together for general counsel, CFOs, CIOs, for example.
What do you enjoy most about your job?
What I enjoy most about my job is I have the opportunity to speak with and meet some of the most accomplished people. On top of that, when I'm at the events and meeting people and speaking with them and being in a room with executives all at the same level, sharing ideas and learning from each other, it's an amazing experience. And hearing from them that we've brought value to them, both to their organization and to enhance their career, is truly rewarding.
And Jessica, how can someone reach you?
They can reach me at jdruckmann@concero.com. Our website is www.concero.com.
This is Paul with your Business Spotlight. We've been speaking with Jessica from Concero. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. This is your host, Mike Mannion. I am joined by my co-hosts, Phil Horegi of Sabre Systems and David Cooper of Bank of America. And we have our next interview guest. His name is Doug Dunkel. Doug is the co-founder and COO of a company called Nightpoint Systems. Doug, welcome, and tell us, what is Nightpoint Systems?
Thank you. Nightpoint Systems is a government contractor. We're what you would call data center centric. So the kind of work that we do is on generally government data centers, providing service to the citizen, One of our bigger customers is Department of Homeland Security, and we provide a lot of work that encompasses kind of the data center and the managing information technology.
For those people who don't know what a data center is, what is a data center?
A data center is a home for all the computers generally, and all the storage and all of the networking that helps guide, you know, what you're doing on the internet.
So the average person's life is better off because of what you do. How?
Well, it is in a number of instances in terms of serving the citizen, especially at Homeland Security, where we support Immigration's Customs Enforcement, Customs Border Protection, the DHS headquarters, and the end citizen ends up benefiting because of what we've done to make sure that their data centers are secure and they get to use technology.
Excellent. How big or small are you guys?
We're about 110 folks right now with about 30 subcontractors. It's about 140 people. This year we look to do $22 million in revenue.
And Knight Point Systems has been around for how long?
Well, it's been around since December of 2005, but the founders quit their day jobs and started in April of 2006.
And how did you twist the founders' arms to give you a job there?
Well, I looked in the mirror and said, maybe we want to do this. And then thought twice about it afterwards. But we started in December, but really looked to change the way that our lives were going and start the company up.
Now, I understand you did not just pick four other people off the street.
That's correct.
Tell us about who these people were and why you chose them.
Yeah, the five founders, including myself, one of them is my brother, Dan Dunkel, who's our chief technology officer. Another, Keith McMeans, was a college friend that I've known now for 20-odd years. Another is Justin Kazemka, who I've known and played sports with since I was 8 years old. And the last one is Bob Isominger, our CEO, who is a family friend.
Beyond the obvious, why is this a company founded by family and friends?
Well, you know, the one thing we realized from doing from being out and working was that it's unfortunately hard to find people that you know and trust and can work with. And so we all felt comfortable. We did probably break every rule in the book by taking your best friends and your family members to start it up. But it's worked out very well because we know and trust each other and know that decisions each are making are for the benefit of the overall company and not just ourselves.
How did the relationships change when they went from being just brother in one case and friends to now you're co-founders, you're running a business together, you're making decisions together, you're accountable together? How did it change?
Well, there are probably more highs and lows to the relationships than I probably would have thought, because you're seeing each other every day. So the issues that you may find with somebody that kind of don't bother you at some point, you know, if you're seeing each other every day, they start to look to become exacerbated. So we've done a good job of making sure that we get together regularly and communicate. I mean, that's been the biggest deal in making sure that we all work together well. And the highs are, I mean, we're experiencing great growth as a company, and so personally we're able to kind of take advantage of that together.
Has it brought you closer to these people, or has it driven you apart, or remains unchanged?
Yeah, it's brought us closer, for sure.
How so?
Well, when you're working with each other daily, there's more opportunity to interact. And so when you think you really know somebody, working with them daily would definitely even add more to that.
It's interesting with the relationships among the five of you. How is that extended to, say, your spouses and, say, significant others? You know, do they have sort of like a social relationship outside of the work that has changed, you know, since you started the business?
Yeah, we end up doing some fun things that we've been able to involve the company in terms of taking what you'd call club trips for overachievement. And so, you know, there are things that we never would have done together to make sure that that we're keeping in touch and having fun while we're doing it, because that's been a big deal in terms of trying to change how our lives were going. We wanted to have fun and work as well.
Doug, you told us in the green room that this concept of getting the right people, the right co-founders, mm-hmm. has really taken a broader level of involvement with your key employees and all your employees in terms of picking the right people.
Right. Well, that's for sure. I mean, what you realize is if you want to, you know, you need to go to work, obviously. So you want to work with people that you know and trust. And through a lot of references is how we've gotten our employee base to grow so fast, and we know that those people are good. Some member of the executive team is in the interviewing process for each one of our employees, and that's a big deal to us. In the end, a lot of us may not have the technical wherewithal to make decisions, but we want to know that we can work with these people, and then we want to know that they could work with the people that they're going to be on site with.
Now, you've worked with your brother prior to founding this company, is that correct?
That's correct.
Tell us a little bit about what that was like when it wasn't your company.
Oh, sure. Well, we started working together. Dan was one of the earlier folks at America Online, and he was involved in getting all of their call centers up and running. And he was having so much fun and found a product that helped America Online get it up and running that he said, hey, you may want to come over and let's go join this company together. The company was called Geotel Communications. Geotel ended up getting acquired by Cisco in the heyday. It was a $40 million company for $2 billion. So Dan, I owe him big time because he got us to the right place at the right time.
Growing up, were you and Dan bosom buddies? You know, couldn't be separated? You agreed on everything?
No, you probably could put white walls in this room and we could have wrestled all day. So.
To tell us about that.
Well, I mean, it's hard when you're siblings and you're 15 months apart. You know, there ends up being a lot of competition, especially if you're males. And we learned afterwards that we could be friends, first off, and then business partners as well.
Who's older?
I'm older. But yeah, I don't look it.
Yeah, dig. Who won the competitions growing up?
I think it depended on which competition it was.
When did the relationship begin to change?
It changed right when I started going to college and he was still in high school. And we became better friends. When we graduated, we kept in touch. He lived with me in the first house that I bought.
Was there any burying of the hatchets that needed to take place, or you guys just moved on and realized you were getting closer? How did that work?
No, it's funny. I think actually over time, there were times where it became difficult, and that was when we really needed to sit back down and communicate. But, you know, the burying of the hatchet probably happened in college, and then, you know, since then, there's just been a way to figure out how to communicate.
Doug, you told us in the green room that a seminal point that changed your life a little bit was a growth spurt between your sophomore and junior year where you grew 7 inches,
yeah.
And your life was never the same after that.
That's true. I wasn't that big growing up, and then I'm still not huge, but I grew about 7 inches, and at that point I was playing sports, and I was very competitive, and I ended up receiving a college scholarship to play football at the University of Virginia. So that was a big deal. Growing was one thing, but realizing that you're going to need to, in essence, overachieve in everything you do to make yourself successful. And I was recruited by small schools at the beginning, and then it became large schools, and it really was because of a work ethic, I think, that my father had taught me.
Is there anything from that experience of playing organized sports, at a fairly high level that carries into, you know, how you conduct your business?
Yeah, I think one thing, and my wife tells me all the time, it's NGU, never give up. You know, I've learned that lesson time and time again, that if you just stay with it, you can be successful. And you just have to have that mindset. And teamwork's a big deal. And you can see by starting a company with five guys, there's got to be a lot of teamwork involved with something like that.
Is there a defined culture that you would say that exists at Knight Point?
Yeah, we actually have a set of values that we put together. And Bob Eisminger, our CEO, is a West Point graduate. And they call them the four C's. And we live by those four C's: candor, commitment, competence. So, we've got a set of values that we try to abide by and make sure that our employees do as well.
When you were asked in the green room what the motivation was for starting the company, you said something about having no net. Tell us about that.
Yeah, when we started the company, for the first year, we didn't take a paycheck, which was painful. But I think what we thought of before we started was, there's no time like the present to do this, and we might as well do it, what I said, without a net. You know, we didn't have any plans other than making this successful. So this was the only option. The other option was go back to other jobs that you may or may not, you know, be able to get at some point.
Well, it's interesting. How did you pick the business model? Because my understanding is that you had been in hardware sales. Knight Point is a service business, and you didn't necessarily have experience in services. So, you know, did you spin a wheel and say, let's do data center service operations? You know, how did you, you know, come up with what business to start?
Well, the business model, and I would love to bring back up the business case I put in front of my wife 6 years ago. But the business model, I mean, the numbers just flew off the page that we were going to be successful in the first 2 months. It took a while to get it up and running, but the business model was around services, and we had only done product sales. All five of us had only done product sales. That would be either hardware or software sales. So I figured it wasn't rocket science, but you end up finding that there's nothing easy and there's a lot of nuances to it. So it took us a while to get it off the ground, at least in our mind.
So what were some of the surprises, I guess, coming from, you know, a product hardware background to services where you actually have to deal with people?
Yeah, products don't talk back, and people do, is what we found. But the people that we, like I said, that we were recruiting, became part of a culture that we were trying to create. And that product background, I think, gave us some leverage to understand what the solution our customers were looking for. There are significant differences, and the nuances that go along with it is, as a services company, you can't just right off the bat say, hey, I'm going to go do work for X, Y, or Z company, especially with the government. You need to have some qualifications that are associated with that. So we became a subcontractor first, and then from there, having those qualifications, we were able to win our own prime contracts with the government.
Given that when you founded the company, you were only willing to bring on board friends and family as founders,
mm-hmm.
How were you able then to begin to hire other people who were not friends and family? You didn't trust them as much? You didn't have a track record, or you didn't share a life with them? How'd you do that?
Well, believe it or not, the first couple of folks, Scott Crabb was one of them, Bob Hogan was another. These folks were people that we had interacted with and known from either business relationships and felt very comfortable with, or actually in the neighborhood. So these guys took early chances, and we were really successful because of guys like Scott and Bob who started early with us. So yeah, the point being, we started with people that we knew, kept adding people we knew, and then really we do a good job of asking folks for good references, because that's what's I really believe that's what's made us successful.
So what do you look for in someone?
Obviously, you know, when you're dealing with the government, you're going to have certain qualifications. So that's kind of the first starting point. But more so than that, you want to see a drive that this person has. And you want to, as I sit down with people, I don't ask them about technology. And generally, I try to understand where their background is and how they've come up and what their mindset look like that with that. But I'm also interested in them as a person, what they do outside of work, you know, what drives them, what keeps them up at night potentially, you know. I really believe that if you like waking up in the morning and you're not hitting your head on the pillow, your W-2 kind of follows suit.
How are you different today than you were 5 years ago?
I'm a little more wizened. I think I got some gray on the sides too. But I mean, you know, we've been through so much, and you hit these road bumps as an executive that, I wish I knew then what I know now, of course. But you've got to go through those road bumps. You have to have some failures. That's how you learn.
So as you look ahead, you know, you have some road bumps, and mm-hmm. as you look the road ahead, what do you see for Knight Point, say, 5 years from now?
Well, there are initiatives that the government and even commercial business are looking at, like cloud computing, cybersecurity. We're really focused on those two endeavors, and I think cloud in particular is something that we've built products as a company around, and it's still kind of nascent in terms of how people are deploying it. So we think that we'll be, one of the top companies coming up in the next 5 years, even to compete against the really, really big guys, because we believe that we know it better probably than anybody else at this point.
You'd mentioned philanthropy in the green room. Tell us mm-hmm. about that.
Well, one of the big deals for us in the beginning was saying, hey, this isn't just, we want to build up the people and the communities that we work in. So I don't know if you remember, about 2 or 3 years ago, Oprah had something on TV called The Big Give, and she would give contestants, money, and they would have philanthropic efforts with it. Well, we kind of took it a step further in our way and said, hey, we have people in Mississippi, we have people in Utah. We'd tell them, hey, here's a sum of money. Come back to us with a business case of how you would like to use it, and then we'll approve it or not approve it from there. And everybody had incredible ideas, and so we've been able to give about $106,000 in the last 3 years for these efforts. Because Bob, our CEO, is a service-disabled veteran, and we started off by just funding, you know, veteran-oriented tasks, but now we've really spread it out so that the communities and the places that we work are getting the benefit too.
What do mom and dad think of their two boys and what they've been able to do?
I think they probably can't believe it at this point. You know?
Seriously?
Well, no.
Surprised?
No, I doubt that they're surprised, but I think that they're probably surprised that we were able to work together at some point. You know, that we grew up, you know, basically beating each other up, and now here you are, you know, good friends and owning a business together.
We'd be remiss if we didn't mention that you were on some rather august teams at University of Virginia playing football. How did you do?
Well, the teams did really well. We were in 4 bowl games in the 5 years that I was there. In 1991, we were number one for 2 weeks, so it was a good deal.
Congratulations.
Paid for my education, so I appreciate the University of Virginia.
Doug, give us the web address for Knight Point Systems,
please. www.knightpointknighttpoint.com.
Okay, one more time so everybody gets it.
Okay, www.knightpointknighttpoint.com.
Fantastic. We've been speaking with Doug Dunkel, co-founder and COO of Knight Point Systems. I'd like to thank my co-hosts, Phil Horegi of Sabre Systems and David Cooper of Bank of America, for helping me structure the interview. Don't forget to check out our website, www.executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders, and we will be right back in a moment after this important business spotlight. I'm Mike Mannion with Sirius Interim Executive Solutions, and this is your business spotlight. Today's guest is
Tim Keim.
And Tim, you're with whom?
Leadership Greater Washington.
And what is that?
We connect business leaders from business, government, nonprofit, get them collectively working together on issues facing Greater Washington.
Okay. There's a lot of organizations that sound like they do that. How is yours different?
Well, we focus on regional issues, focusing on making sure folks that work together should work together. We really believe in the power of relationships, so I'm kind of a matchmaker of folks who have influence, and we really kind of inspire their collaborative efforts.
So people or companies who would need that sort of help, give us some examples.
Well, anyone from a nonprofit CEO who's kind of siloed needs to connect with other folks, a business leader who has the ability to make change, or a government official needs to know more about what's going on, not just in his or her jurisdiction, but across Greater Washington.
Okay. Can you give us a success story?
Yeah, let me use the Fishing School. Is a nonprofit that helps folks in Northeast Washington focus on boys and girls getting after-school services. They were about ready to go under, but because their leader was in Leadership Greater Washington, got connected with business folks who transformed the organization, came in, did a business plan, did a marketing plan, communications plan, and now the organization has touched thousands more lives as a result.
Tim, what is your web address?
www.lgwdc.org.
We've been speaking with Tim Keim of Leadership Greater Washington. My name is Mike Mannion with Sirius Interim Executive Solutions, and that was your business spotlight. We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. This is your host, Mike Mannion of Sirius Interim Executive Solutions, and I'm joined by my co-host, Catherine Ryan of the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. It's my pleasure to introduce to you our next guest, a gentleman by the name of Rod Belcher, President of Belcher Consultants. Rod, welcome. And what is Belcher Consultants?
Oh, thank you, Mike. Belcher Consultants is a full-service construction management firm. We focus on 4 areas, the first, of course, being construction or project management, putting construction professionals on-site or in our client's office to help them oversee and facilitate their construction projects. We also do CPM scheduling or critical path method scheduling, utilizing project management software created by Oracle. We do cost engineering or cost estimating, helping our clients determine the actual cost of their projects, and then claims and dispute resolution services, assisting them with resolving claims and disputes at the lowest level possible.
And Rod, for the layman in the audience, if all of those 4 things don't happen, what happens to the construction project?
Typically, it takes longer, it costs more, and people end up with hurt feelings, to say the least.
Okay. And some of your clients are whom?
Some of our clients are major construction firms or construction management firms, such as McDonnell Boyer and Peck, STV Incorporated, Parsons Transportation Group, and AECOM.
Got it. And how big or small, by whatever metric you want to use, is Belcher?
We are 15 people strong, Mike. Okay.
And you've been doing this for how long, Rod?
Mike, I've been doing it almost as long as I can remember, starting really right after I graduated from college back in the late 80s. So for over 20 years.
Okay. Somewhat different question. How long has Belcher Consultants been around?
As a full-time entity, it's been around since 2006. Originally, though, Mike, we started in 1996. You know, like most firms, I did it part-time or whenever I had time away from my full-time job to just help create the firm and establish itself. And then in 2006, we were blessed with the opportunity to operate as a full-time business.
So for 10 years, you had two jobs, essentially. You were working a full-time job, and then you were doing Belcher Consultants in the evening or on the weekends, or how did that work?
That's correct. Yeah. So whenever I had time, I focused on Belcher Consultants.
So in 1996 through 2006, you were working for whom full-time?
I was actually working for another construction management firm called Bellstar, which is founded by my older brother and father. I had the opportunity to operate as a COO, or Director of Construction Management and Scheduling, for them for 12 to 13 years, gaining some very valuable experience, knowledge, and exposure.
What was it like working for your brother and father?
Well, like most things, there were some good things, there were some bad things, but overall it was a very positive experience and I enjoyed it.
Well, what would you say the highlight is? For those folks who are thinking about working in a family enterprise, what was the highlight of working with your brother and father?
Well, the highlight is, you know, you're working with people that you know most of your life, and there's obviously that family bond, and you have a love and appreciation for each other, and that being said, you try to look out for each other most of the time. I guess if you want me to go into the low life, is
sure.
Sometimes you're taken for granted and you're not appreciated for the same reason, your family. They assume, well, he's family, he'll understand. So there's certain sacrifices or problems or situations you have to deal with being a family member that you wouldn't have to deal with if you weren't a family member.
Yeah.
So when did you decide to start your own company?
Like I said, Catherine, I started really back in late 1996, but as far as going full-time, it was around 2005, 2006, I saw an opportunity beginning to come into fruition.
So what did it feel like to go out on your own?
Well, I was a little bit nervous, Mike. You know, there's of course, the reality, the sadness of leaving those behind, or the relationships that you've established with your past employer, having to move ahead and really start out on your own. But there's the excitement, the energy, the positiveness of getting out there and on your own and trying to make a name for yourself.
You had used the word create your own, or the phrase create your own identity, yeah, when we were preparing earlier. Right. Tell us about how that felt, to create your own identity.
Well, thank you, Mike, and I appreciate you reminding me about that. Basically, as I mentioned before, I worked for my father and brother, and they were the bosses. And so I don't want to say you're restricted, but the rules, the reputation, the brand, so to speak, is established, and it's theirs. When I have the opportunity to start my own company, you know, I can establish my own brand, my own reputation, my own rules, my own success or failure.
Yeah.
So that really is a unique opportunity and something that we all really should desire.
Working for the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce, I often hear from a lot of people who are interested in starting a small business. What tips would you give other people thinking about going down this path?
First tip is to do your homework. Look at where you're going, establish, you know, is this something that's really viable? Can I be successful at it? Meaning, can I make a living at it? Second thing is it something I'm passionate about? Because even if it's something that you can be financially successful with, if you don't really have a desire, the passion for it, eventually it will die out. And the third is, can I help people? Can I help myself? Can I help my fellow human beings? Is it something that, and I know it sounds a little Pollyannish, but is it something that leaves the world in better shape? Does it have a positive effect on society? So those are some of the three keys I would recommend.
It sounds like having an important impact in your community and also having strong relationships is important. Yeah. Do you think that that is an impactful thing in your business life as well?
That's the key. I think that people do business with you not necessarily because you're the best or the most competent. It's they do business with you because they're comfortable with you. And getting people comfortable with you is about establishing and maintaining relationships. You know, people would rather work with friends, even if the friend may not be as capable as someone who isn't their friend. So it's all about relationships, meeting people, getting to know them, allowing them to get to know you, and creating that comfort level to where, you know, you mutually decide that you can do business together.
What does that have to do with your simple country upbringing? And those were your words, simple country upbringing.
Well,
are those two related at all?
That's what it's about. Where I grew up, it's about relationships, you know. It's about the people you know. You know, where I grew up in Lynchburg, Virginia, it was big enough to where you had all the modern conveniences and technology, but small enough to where if people didn't know you, they knew someone who knew you. So a lot about your success or your standing in the community had to do with your relationships and how you treated people. So treating people, being honorable, being honest, open, and fair is very important.
Where did you learn how to treat people?
Mainly from my parents.
Tell us more.
My parents, my father was, I know it sounds sort of funny, but my father was the son of a sharecropper in the South. So he grew up, really had a hard life. And in his upbringing, he established certain mantras that he lived by. You know, first, of course, we talked about relationships, establishing good relationships with people, treating people fairly, trying to be open and honest with people, and also helping people, all types of people. He didn't really matter who they were. People need your help. You assist them. And that's sort of what I try to do in my daily business and in my personal activities and so forth, try to help people.
Well, what did your father do for a living?
My father was actually an engineer. He worked, like most young men at his age, he joined the military, spent time in the military, and then went to college and got an engineering degree, and then worked in corporate America, first at Westinghouse, and then Corning Glass, and then Babcock and Wilcox, and so forth. So,
what do you think his upbringing, being the son of a sharecropper, what sort of impact did that have on him and his values? You've touched on it a little bit, but tell us more.
I think being the son of a sharecropper, he learned to work hard at an early age, and he knew the key to life was not only working hard, but maybe education. That's one of the things he valued, not only him, but a lot of my aunts and my other uncles. They were actually pretty educated.
Why do you think your father wasn't bitter about growing up the son of a sharecropper? Instead, one of his core values was helping other people. And you said anybody else. It didn't matter who they were. How was your father able to do that?
You know what? That's a good point, Mike, because he was sort of a unique guy. And the only thing I can conclude is really a spiritual upbringing. He was always a man of faith from a young age. And I think being a man of faith, it sort of allows you to deal with hardships that if you didn't have a belief in a higher source or a higher being, whatever your religion is, it's some pills are hard to swallow. But I think that being someone who believed in a higher power helped him to deal with some of the hardships and setbacks, and a lot of them I don't know about, but I've been told about in life.
Yeah. You know. Early in this interview, you used the word blessed. Did he pass that spiritual legacy on to you as well?
Yes, he did. He, at a young age, he sort of made sure we all went to church, tried to, you know, instill in us the tenets and the commandments and the sayings of the good book, and and not only carry that, you know, in church, but throughout our lives and so forth.
Well, we know a little bit about your dad. What about mom?
Mom was just as interesting a person, and she was very kind and timid. So she sort of, my father was sort of the alpha male, and my mom was sort of the supporting kind soul. She always cared about people and very altruistic. I think that's part of maybe what attracted them. They both believed in helping people and so forth. So my mom was very, but strong. Of course, she raised six of us, so she had a lot of strength. But she had a awareness and enlightenment that was very unique.
You had said, as we were preparing, to be careful how you get to the top. What did you mean by that, and where did that come from? Did mom and dad shape that view?
Yeah, they did. Because I guess the best way to put it is what goes around comes around. So if you give a lot of goodness, a lot of support, a lot of kindness, helping people, it'll come back around. I've been helped in many ways. People have spoken to me and talked to me and said, you remember when you did a lot of stuff I don't remember? I did. Some of it I do, but it was just examples of throughout my life trying to help people, irregardless of whether I receive a benefit from it, because it does come back to you, Mike.
Yeah.
And whether it's good or bad, it comes back to you.
Earlier in your college career, you experienced a turning point, and
yes,
it was a result of some people helping you.
Right.
Tell us about that, please.
Well, you know, like a lot of young men or young women being in college, you know, you're in an environment where, you know, you're suddenly, you go from being a big fish in a small pond to being a small fish in a big pond. And I had all those problems and things you had to adjust to, like most young kids, and facing challenges academically. And the fact that you have one or two people who just took a personal interest in you and sort of made it their mission to make sure that you would grow and develop and do what you needed to do as a student really made a difference to me. Because up to that point, like I said, it's a big environment. It's a great environment, but you know, sometimes it just takes somebody to reach out and grab you, to slow things down, to work with you, and really generate not only a concern but that belief. That's really what they did. They instilled in me or helped me develop that seed that, hey, I could do this. I can study hard. I can go, you know, study to be an engineer and get a degree. And through their help and concern, you know, that's what I achieved.
It sounds like those were very strong mentors for you during your school days. Is mentoring a thing that's important to you now that you're that professional that young professionals are looking for to advice?
Yes.
Is that something that is important to your career now?
Yes, it is. And I both actively mentor. I'm seeking. There's a couple organizations that I'm involved in. One as on their board of directors, and one as a, I guess I would say, a backup mentor. I'm not necessarily a frontline mentor, because I believe in reaching back, and I believe that those who are blessed, who've been given opportunities, need to make sure that the next generation has an opportunity to succeed as well.
What do your father and your older brother think of your success now with Belcher Consulting?
It's funny you mentioned that. I think they're proud. I think they want me to succeed. They want me to do well, because it's not only a reflection on me, it's a reflection on them. So I think they take a certain amount of pride, and I've always valued the relationship, and I really appreciate their support and encouragement throughout the development of our company.
Yeah. Rod, give us the web address for Belcher Consultants, please.
The web address for Belcher Consultants is www.belconic.net, and that would be B-E-L. C-O-N as in Nancy, I-N-C dot net.
Okay, we want to make sure everybody gets it, so give it to us one more time, please.
www.belconinc.net.
Got it. Thank you, Rod. We've been speaking with Rod Belcher, president of Belcher Consultants. I'd like to thank all of our guests today, including Lloyd Mustin, president of XL Incorporated, Doug Dunkel, chief operating officer and co-founder of Nightpoint Systems, and of course, most recently, Rod Belcher, president of Belcher Consultants. I'd also like to thank my co-hosts, Phil Haregi of Sabre Systems, David Cooper of Bank of America, and Catherine Ryan of the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. Most of all, I'd like to thank you, our audience. If it wasn't for you, we would not even have a radio show. Don't forget to check us out on the web at www.executiveleadersradio.com to learn more about our executive leaders. We've been broadcasting from the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. This is your host, Mike Mannion, with Sirius Interim Executive Solutions. Thank you for listening. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to Executive Leaders Radio, the region's premier radio show highlighting local executive leaders. We hope you've enjoyed the show here on Federal News Radio. You can learn more about Executive Leaders Radio by visiting executiveleadersradio.com
or tune in next time right here on Federal News Radio. That's executiveleadersradio.com.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, WTOPFM HD2 Washington. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of Washington Nationals baseball, Washington Capitals hockey, the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, and American University Eagles basketball. Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m., the Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics, and your source for federal news now.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
For 45 years, people have relied on Village Green Apothecary to give them individualized nutrition, pharmacy, and healthy living products. Village Green will give you the kind of person-to-person help and attention that mass-market pharmacies have long ago forgotten. You can depend on us for knowledge, experience, product selection, and a smile. Visit Village Green in Bethesda at 5415 West Cedar Lane. Call us at 301-530-0800 or check out our website at myvillagegreen.com. We're here to help you.
Welcome to the Essentials of Healthy Living on 1500 AM.